Hi, my name is Marsha Mormon, also known as Marsha Altman, also known as Marsha Warner, but on the internet, primarily known as Jit Coffin. I was the sort of head senior writer of the Book Your Hair web series from 1999 to about 05. I don't actually have a hard date for that. I kind of don't remember that much, but I decided to go back and look over my old work and the work of other people who I worked with to see how terribly I did or how well they did. And if you've read the web series, then this is a great podcast for you. If you've not read the web series, don't know what you're doing here. Just listening to the sound of my voice. But if you want to consider reading the web series, then you should know that the backstory for the web series is that Bucky O'Hare and Toad Wars was a early 90s cartoon that ran for 13 episodes, and it was a very complex cartoon that had very poor animation. Not very, very poor, but it had your standard Korean animation for the early 90s, late 80s, and decent voice work, not great voice work, but decent voice work pretty much all around, and it had great voice. That's how I got into it, because I saw a toy commercial, and I was like, these are toys that whatever is going on with this, I want in on this, and I actually started watching the show because of the toy commercial, because the toys were just very, very well modeled. That's actually how I got into Bucky O'Hare, and I was into it as a kid, and then that faded as I got older. And then, in 1999, I had a dream that was a Bucky O'Hare, 98 actually, I had a dream that was a Bucky O'Hare related dream. I don't really remember what it was about, it was just some plot line that my mind thought of. I don't know what happened, but I woke up and I was like, I gotta get back into the show. This is actually what happened to me. I have dreams that are related to things I used to be into, and then I get way back into them. It's happened with a number of different shows over the course of my life that determined the course of my writing and dreams that I have. So I decided to do a web series to continue the series, but in script form, no animation. Some people were very confused about that concept and asked me, you know, when is it going to be animated? And I said, never. And I wrote a couple scripts off the top of my head, and then posted, put up a website on GeoCities, because this was, you know, 98, saying, hey, if you want to do this with me, please send me scripts. And I used the format for scripts from another web series that I was reading, which was Sequest Season 4 web series. Sequest had 3 seasons. There's a Season 4 web series. And I used that format, if you're wondering where my formatting came from the whole series, in terms of just page alignment, how characters are introduced, they're always introduced with their names in caps, in the first time they appear in the script itself, use of the word beat, which means, you know, slight pause and where the actor would be speaking. All of that was pulled from that web series. Because I really, this was the internet in 98, and you really didn't have a lot of resources to go to, so I just had to copy what I had seen before. And as a result, I wrote most of season 2. Just to be clear, season 1 is the TV series. Season 2 is the first season of the web series. I decided to do 22 episodes a season, which was way too much. But I kept to it, and I started getting submissions. Not a lot of submissions, but I got submissions. The first person who contacted me was actually this crazy guy, who we went back and forth a little bit, and he said he wanted to do, what was his thing? He wanted to do, he only had one major plot line he wanted to do, which was that they found this cryogenically frozen cat, and this was very important that Jenny from the TV, I'm not going to really explain what the TV show is about. You really shouldn't be hearing this as soon. Well, it's a show about animals. Mammals led by the hare, who's green for some reason, are fighting toads who are brainwashed by a computer program. And there's one human in the show who has found a way, a dimensional doorway through his door in San Francisco. And there's a lot of San Francisco jokes, actually, at the expense of hippies in the TV show. They're a little stale, but they're there. And then the show itself is based on a very uneven graphic novel that makes sense for most of it, and then at the end abruptly goes into this weird mouse universe that makes no sense. And I've never really been able to follow it, even though it's very short. And from there, the show was written, it rewrote the ending to the graphic novel so that it would be, something that could continue and not go off into a weird mouse universe. I can't describe the graphic novel, it loses track at a certain point. And they fight the toads, and that's pretty much the show. There's a lot of politics. Very, very complicated show, actually. It's just a massive cast. And a green hair in a red uniform who is fighting toads. Very successful, actually. So anyway, back to this guy, whose name I don't remember. I think that it's Mike, but I really could be wrong about that. He said that it was very, very important that this new character he had invented, who had his name, be the character that Jenny, who's the only named female character from the show, other than Mimi, fall in love with him immediately, and that this be, like, a really important thing. And all of his script ideas were based on this new guy doing something awesome, and Jenny falling in love with him all over again because of it. And I remember him writing, like, in emphasis quotes or whatever. And Jenny is very in love with him. And I'm like, okay, you're a creepy guy, and I don't want you to have anything to do with this web series. Plus, you haven't actually written anything. You just sent me ideas. Plus, Buffy and Jenny being a couple is kind of, I want to say, canon to the show, and I really wanted to preserve that. They were never really a couple in the show. They were just kind of, you knew that there was something going on, but it wasn't really obvious to them. It was just kind of like they were at a certain level where they were obviously, they liked each other, but they weren't together, and maybe they hadn't in the past. Now I wanted to run with that. He just really, really, really had this thing for Jenny that was uncomfortable for me. This guy didn't work out, obviously, but a couple people did write in, and three of them became senior writers. Senior writer means that you are involved in the planning of the web series. You're writing multiple episodes. You're contributing to other people's scripts. One of them, I'm not going to use their real names, mostly because I don't remember them, but also because they didn't write their real names on this, so I'm not going to use them. One of them is Farrell McTaglet, and he is just an all-around great writer in terms of working with other people's material. And another one, Claudia Carranza, I might not be pronouncing that correctly. She brought in all the Elderberry stuff, basically. And not Dahlia. I always think he's Dahlia, but his real name is Davich Nightfall. Okay, yeah. I was never good at pronouncing his pen name. I never had to, really. And he wrote the Dahlia scripts. But he also ran the fan art site. And I'm not a big fan art person, unless it's really, really good. I don't really want to look at people's bad fan art. That's why I don't draw a lot of fan art. I've drawn some, but it's pretty bad. I don't recommend it. So he ran that site, and for that I was very grateful. And he was a senior writer through the entire... All these people were senior writers through the entire run. So some of them would disappear for like a year. I would do this too during the course of the series. I would just be off doing different things and not be connected to what was going on in the web series at all because I was doing other things in my life. And it's not like we got hated or anything. There was no reason to continue other than love Buffy O'Hare. So anyway, I'm going to go over season one now. Season 2, which is technically the first season of the web series. I wrote most of this season. It's the weakest season. It has good things in it, but it is the weakest season by far, and there's a couple reasons for this. All of them sort of unavoidable. One is that I wrote a lot of it. And so my voice is very, very present in the stories. We hadn't really learned to work together, not because we were bad at working together, but because we didn't know each other. Half the scripts were written before anyone even contacted me. So there's a far more unified voice in the later seasons than this. This one is more me talking and then other people coming in and bringing their things. And I was a younger writer than I was later on. And I was also just sort of working from the ground up. I had this very, very big universe to deal with that from the TV series, and there were way too many characters. And I made a rule, I made a couple rules at the beginning. One was that we were not going to kill off anyone from the original show without a lot of prior discussion about it, because we should just be loyal to the original show, and no one should die from the original show, just get rid of them. Even though I never had anything to do with Bruiser, I could never give him dialogue that wasn't banana related. I mean, he was just such a... I had all of these characters who really didn't contribute to the plot as much, and I didn't know what to do with them. And I'm not really good at writing fight scenes, so I would write these very character-driven scenes, which was great, but a couple of the characters were mostly fight-oriented, which is great for a cartoon show, but not so great when you're trying to write emotional dialogue. So I just never had anything to do with Bruiser. I hated him. That's not even Mimi. He's not part of the regular cast, technically, but she became part of the regular cast. Then I grew to love her, I think because I couldn't see her. There's a lot of elements to this web series that were... We had very few visual gags for the obvious reason that we just had to describe them and hope people would get them and not be skimming or understand we were making a visual joke or something like that. And Mimi and the TV show was very irritating to look at and to hear, even though her voice actor was very good. And I just couldn't stand her. And then when the web series, she became a useful character, and I didn't have to look at her or see her, I could write for her. She became one of my favorite characters over the course of the web series. So I had to work with making something that was incredibly visual, not visual at all, and I hadn't thought it out tremendously ahead of time. I just started writing this kind of the way that I work. It's sort of by fly, on the fly. That's how I wrote all 10 books of the Pride and Prejudice series that has now, we're almost at the book 6 in terms of publication. So I wrote them all on the fly, pretty much. Or I wrote the first 5 on the fly, and then I realized I should be sitting down and thinking things out. So anyway, let's go on with season 1. Let's go on with season 2, which is first of the seasons in the web series. I'm just going to go episode by episode because I know them pretty well. Chains of Command, air date, 9/6/1998. Wow, that really takes me back. This episode is the opener, obviously. It's not a particularly strong episode. I had a lot to do in this episode. I had to kind of reintroduce all the characters. There's a lot of descriptions of characters that don't go on for too long, but have to be mentioned, have to explain some backstory. I wasn't really expecting anyone who didn't see Bucky O'Hare to not know who these characters were, but I also knew that it had been many years since Bucky O'Hare had aired. It had been at least 6 or 7 years, so people didn't have it fresh off the top of their heads. About 2 years have passed since the TV show, and this is important. In the TV show, we assumed Lily was 12. I don't know if they actually said his age, but just based on the way that he looked, he was either 10 or 12. And we said he was 12. And then in the opening of season 2, he is 14. He has grown tremendously, which we really didn't, we would forget about it from time to time, that he is taller at this point than everyone in the universe except for, I think, Al McGator and Toad Moore. He's hit puberty, not all the way through it, but by the end of the series, he's pretty much the tallest person in the entire dimension. And this comes up very rarely, but when it does, it's kind of funny. So there's a lot of scenes of him hitting his head in the first season, like just on, you know, because he's just shot up and he hasn't really adjusted to the fact that he's much taller than everyone else. And visually it would be very problematic because there's a lot of scenes where he's yelling at someone or yelling back or whatever, it's tense scene, but you realize at that point he's like 2 feet taller than the person that he's talking to. So he would really be towering over them, and they would just be trying to yell up at him, and he could just basically dead-eye, he's like, I don't know, 2 feet. He could probably just pick the end of the bird. He could probably just pick dead-eye up and just toss him somewhere if he wanted to. He wouldn't do that, but that was a very strange thing in the show, that they decided to just make proportional. Willie was just sort of big for a 12-year-old. He was a normal 12-year-old size boy, and he was taller than most of the characters in the show, and then obviously he gets older and it gets worse. That was actually something I really enjoyed doing, was just having him hit his head on various things. So that happens a lot. We introduced two really important characters to the series. One who appears in a lot of fanfics just because he's a very important character for giving information to other characters, which is the UAC SC chairman of the Security Council, Fritz Warner, who wins the election. He's an actor, he's a rabbit, which is different from hares, and he's from another dimension. And he's got a lot of aces up his sleeve, much more than he should have. And he's an actor in another dimension. It's mentioned that he, at some point in the series, I don't remember when, says that his biggest regret was Space Jam. He is Bugs Bunny, that is his stage name. But now he's older, and he's retired from acting, except when he gets millions of dollars to do movies. And that is why he did Space Jam, to get a lot of money to buy a house. He never actually says why he did Space Jam. The other one, Cadet Warner, as obviously Daffy Duck. They're actually not related, they just have the same last Jewish name. Daffy Duck did Space Jam to work with Bill Murray. He didn't say this either, but that was a funny joke to me. So, and he sort of served as Chris Warner's bodyguard for this series, and he has a lot going on too. He's got a lot of problems. Daffy Duck was never a level head character anyway. So I think Fritz shows up in most fanfic because when he becomes chairman of the Security Council, he's sort of in charge of giving the crew orders or just explaining to them what the plotline is. Like, hey, you should go to this planet now, and here's why. Go spend the rest of the episode doing that. So when people wrote fanfic about the web series, they were like, well, we need to use Fritz again. So he shows up in a lot of other people's fanfic. So I was kind of proud of that. He's obviously the favorite character that I... No, Kadath is. Kadath is my favorite character that I invented. They eventually had a plot line that was pretty disastrous in terms of my writing. I'm not proud of it at all. I really made a huge mistake in that area. I really should have done it better or not done it at all. But I'll talk more about that when we get to that. It introduces the regens, who are these lizards from another dimension who are capable of regenerating. So they're very, very hard to kill, and most of the time they're mercenaries. And they're a major plotline in Season 2. They come up again from time to time. We focus much more on the toads in the later seasons, just because we had a different writing idea. So I introduced another enemy, sort of an enemy, though. And you don't see them a lot in later seasons. That's another thing about the season, is you are introduced to characters you don't see again, because they didn't work. And other writers didn't want to work with them. Everyone does this, they introduce characters, no one works with them, and you never see them again. Okay, Episode 2, The Aldebaran Accident, air date 9/20/98. This is the first Aldebaran episode. The show obviously set up a huge thing with the Aldebarans in terms of being the magical race that never told anyone about their magic and being jerks about it, and Willy vaguely being involved and Bucky sort of putting up with it. And this became the most popular plotline, I think, in the web series. It was certainly the most ongoing plotline other than the Toads. It came down eventually to the Toads and the Aldebaran plotline, and they didn't always cross. There was just no toad involvement for several episodes because we were doing all the bear stuff. But this is the only... this one feels different from the other ones, and there's a reason for that, which is that almost all of the Aldebaran background was written by Claudia. Claudia came in, emailed me, just out of nowhere, to say, hey, I heard you're doing this thing, I really want to do it. I've thought of a ton of stuff for the Aldebarans. And she had written it down, too. It was just a tremendous amount of material of how the whole society works, and the whole thing that men aren't allowed to practice magic, and are killed if they have magic, and all these different orders, and Jenny is secretly the daughter of the queen, but she doesn't know that, and she's a twin brother, and she doesn't know that either, and he's head of the male resistance, and she doesn't know that either. And this will come up very, very soon. But I wrote the Aldebaran accident before Claudia ever emailed me, so this is the only one that's pure me. And it's far less complicated, far less crowded. there's a lot less politics. And once you start reading the series, you're like, what? You know, this is suddenly very, not very different, but pretty different. And that's because I wrote this one before I met Claudia. I don't think I would change it. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But that is the explanation behind why that episode is very different from the previous episode. It's basically a repeat of the Sisters of Aldebaran. Basically, the Toads, they want this energy that the Aldebaran seem to have, but no one understands. And they attack Aldebaran, and Willy shows up because that's what Willy does. And we find out that Willy is capable of magic, and the only creatures who are capable of magic in the universe are the cats from this particular planet. But Willy is capable of it too. We never fully explain in the series why humans and cats seem to have a similar thing, but we eventually decided that Willy would have slightly different powers, which was one of my favorite developments. In this one, he just seems to just have all the varying powers. And that became a plotline that was very, very important. But it seemed like a natural continuation of that thing. So that's the Aldebaran accident. Buffy in this one is actually pretty tolerant of what's going on Aldebaran. They never tell him. That's the thing. And he eventually gets very frustrated, and it gets sort of increasingly hilarious how much he hates Aldebaran and everything it has to do with anything. And that he wants nothing to do with it. And yet he's always dragged into it because he's Bucky O'Hare. Shore Leave, 10/4/98. I said before, I'm a big character-driven person. This is a really character-driven. I don't think the Toads are even in this one. I don't think so. Basically, they all go on shore leave. They do other things. No, I think there's a thing at the beginning. Yeah, there's a thing at the beginning, and then there's, like, no Toads. I didn't know anything to do with Deadeye. I tried to do something with Deadeye. I didn't get to it. Willy goes to an engineer's convention, and we find out about how he was developed, which is kind of good. I also introduced a character named Ramsey McLeod, who's an engineer, and I thought that he was going to be a more interesting character than he was. He shows up again, but really out of plot necessity and anything else, and not for several seasons, so there's no reason to pay attention to him. And Bucky, who is not currently together with Jenny, this is the first we see of Bucky and Jenny's complex relationship. Bucky's not really together with Jenny, and he meets a girl named Shira, who is named after a toy that I owned when I was, like, 5. You know, Shira was, like, the female He-Man. Anyway, so I just named her Shira, I don't know. And she has a name of O'Neill, he has a name of O'Hare. She's also a hare. It goes badly, eventually, but initially it seems to go okay. But Jenny's kind of jealous, but she's kind of not admitting she's jealous. And it's obvious to Willy that Jenny is jealous, and Bucky doesn't really understand that. They sort of figure that out. Deadeye does something in this episode. I'm not a big fan of running these pirate plots. So, I don't know actually what, I don't remember what, I don't remember. The summary seems to say that there's a lot going on with Deadeye, and I don't remember it at all. Maybe it was very minor. Both Encounters of the Humankind, 10/18/98. This is a horrible mistake. I introduced one human character, and I fuck it up so much. I just went, Lucas MacArthur is a character who's in a lot of season 2, because I thought he was going to be successful, and he wasn't, because I really just messed up how I introduced him. I ended up using him a lot in fanfic that is not related to those series. Well, it's related, but it wasn't necessarily quote-unquote written by me. I wrote it under another name. Posted it on an Angel Fire site. I just didn't want it to be associated with the web series. He's a very interesting character, but he's human. He got caught sort of in the universe for sort of weird reasons, and he's been stuck there since he was 10 or 12 or, no, 16. He's been stuck there since he was 16. And he's now in his 30s, I think. And he's not actually eager to go back. He's really gotten close to the raccoon cause, involving the Planet Knocker 2, which was the first planet to be invaded by toads, which has a connection with Buffy that will come up sooner or later. But, and he is just a total jerk. I was supposed to make him, like, a little bit of a jerk, but rereading the script, which I did yesterday, he is just a huge jerk, but to the point where he is very unlikable as a person, as a character on screen. You wouldn't want to watch a show about him. So, anyway, he's a terrorist. He takes over the Righteous, and, you know, like, obviously all set up so that they can get something going without having to pay. It ends up being, that's the problem, the UAC doesn't have a lot of money, so they have to, like, get a terrorist to go move something, because it would just cost too much to have, like, labor union people do it. It's sort of a scam thing, I guess, it ended up being, is that it was all set up to avoid paying to move the climate converter to Knocker 2. That's what it was. That's actually pretty hilarious now that I think about it, is that balancing the budget became very important to Chairman Warner and then to later chairmen. And, Bucky gets really annoyed when he finds out this is what it was all about, that his whole crew was, like, kidnapped and held hostage, so that they would have to deliver this climate converter to this other planet because Rick Swann wanted to save money. And he just seems just like, we need to move this climate converter, we don't have any money. I know. Let's get this terrorist to kidnap the crew and have them do it, like, for ransom. And then we won't have to pay union workers. I'm thinking more and more about this. This is more and more attractive to me as a ridiculous plot line. But, yeah, Lucas didn't work. I'm really sad about that, actually. Because I could have done things with him had he been a good character. And he wasn't a good character, so other people didn't use him in their stories because he was just unusable, pretty much, unless you needed another human in the universe, which came up from time to time. But even then, no one would really think of him. They put him out of their mind because he was just, he's just too much of a jerk. I'm sorry about that. I really regret doing that. Anyway, next episode. Ceremony. Air date 11/1/98. We're still in 1998, wow. This is the first one with somebody else, Pharaoh McPiglet, who went on to do a lot of other stuff. Pharaoh is a guy who didn't come in with a whole set of characters he wanted to introduce, which I was very grateful for in the end, because pretty much everyone else did that. Except maybe Rygar, I don't think, did that. Like, people came in, they're just like, I invented 20 new characters, and here they are, and they're all interesting, and we should do some constantly. And sometimes we would use them, and then sometimes we wouldn't. And they would just show up and then disappear because no one else wanted to use them. They weren't useful. Pharaoh was kind of an expert at using other people's characters or working with characters who existed from the TV show. So I don't really remember that much about this, what this one is about. Oh, yes, this is the introduction of Dial O'Croak, which was not a name that I did. I'm not good at naming people, but come on. Dial becomes the engineer on Screaming Mimi, which is Mimi's ship. Also, Jonathan Weissman, who was introduced previously, is also as the first mate of that ship. He's actually underdog. There's a lot of crossovers in this show that we decided not to kind of acknowledge were crossovers. We were just pulling characters up there, right, from other universes. Jonathan Weissman was a character I played in RPG. Then he just kind of does generic things. He very rarely uses his superpowers on this show, even though he has them. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Anyway, Dial's a Squeezosaur, and he's Alligator's nephew or something like that. Yeah, I think he's his nephew. And he doesn't know that his uncle is, like, this well-known mercenary who is wanted by pretty much everyone, and has double-crossed pretty much everyone. He doesn't know that. He just knows that his uncle paid for his education and that he's going to be an engineer, and it's so awesome. He also doesn't use contractions. Pharaoh later on in the series said, I don't know why I did that. That was dumb. Let's just have Dial use contractions. I was trying to do something, and I don't know what it was. So, he's just very kind of stiff and nerdy, and he gets used whenever the Screaming Mimi is news, because he becomes the main member of the fleet. There's only 3 ships in the fleet initially, so it wasn't too many characters to handle. Though, to be perfectly honest, we didn't use Dallas' ship that often. I don't remember who was the crew of that ship, even though that was from the TV show. They only showed up, like, twice in the TV show. They had names that were really generic. So, anyway, so there's some kind of ceremony on Rigel 5, the koala planet. Now, let me just point out that even in season 5, when people refer to Rigel 5, they call it the koala planet. As if we were to say, like, America, the place where Americans live. Or we would just say, instead of saying America, we would say the place where Americans live. Or the place where white people live. Like, it was very strange how people would just refer to it as the koala planet. It felt strange in that, in our mind, it was like, and that's the koala planet. But we actually called it the koala planet, and then characters started doing that too. So that was just kind of a, crosswalk, us not thinking it 100% true, or either that, or we just wanted people to know, like, Rigel 5, of course, that's the koala planet. Let's just remind readers that it is the koala planet. It has no other distinguishing features. So there's an Agator plotline in this one. There's a Toad plotline in this one. And mostly it's introduced Dial, but again, Dial is the only, I think the only character that Pharaoh introduced, and he became an essential part. They just needed an engineer for that ship, and so he invented an engineer. They do this ceremony of vigilance that they claim they do every year. We never did it again. We never needed to. It was just kind of a setup of things that happened with Negator. Negator, which is a pretty hilarious name. The TV show was pretty good at coming up with hilarious names, and sometimes we succeeded in doing them, and sometimes we're just like, oh, I have to name this character now. There's a character with dialogue in this scene. Just whatever, I don't care. Give him a name, Smith or something. I don't think anyone's actually named Smith, but people had pretty generic names, or they had awesome names. We only did one or the other. There's, like, no in between. Ronan Steele, 11-15-98. This was Dawvish's first script. He introduced a character named Dalion. Now, there's a lot of kind of controversy surrounding Dalion, and there certainly was among the staff. I took in that script because I was taking everything, and he introduced one character, and I'm like, alright, fine. What does he do? He killed everybody? Okay, fine, whatever. Cool, you wrote a script. I'm thrilled about it. And it's pretty long, too, for a season 2 script. We did not write very long scripts at that point. We got much, much longer as we went along, and we had more to do. But basically, they meet this creature, and if you've ever been in a role-playing game, or a LARP, or some online RPG, or anything, you have definitely met someone who has invented this character, which is a really, really badass guy, who's probably a wolf, who has, like, super cybernetics, and the creator of this character can describe those cybernetics in incredible detail, like, to the point where you're just like, okay, I don't need to know about that particular claw and the missiles attached to it. And he went through, like, some horrible thing, and his whole race died, and now he's out for revenge, and he's a super badass. I've described characters that, if you have any experience in either writing or role-playing, you have met. And so, Dalion was kind of familiar in that sense, but we didn't have a Dalion. We didn't have a character like that in the web series. Much later in the web series, Rygar, who came on, I think in season 3, he edited all of the earlier scripts just for grammatical stuff, so I was very grateful to him. Rygar said something to the effect of, you know, why do we have Dalion? Why do we have 3 scripts worth of Dalion just killing everybody? And I said, well, if we didn't have Dalion, we would probably have people submitting Dalion-like characters in their scripts. So we can just say to them now, we already have that character, his name is Dalion. We have one of them. That is precisely how many we want. And he was occasionally used by other writers. He sometimes was used, but we would kind of forget about him. Because he was a loner, and so he wasn't really connected to a lot of other plot lines. He has some backstory where he's tortured by the toads, and his whole race was killed, and he has cybernetics, and also magic that's related to Jenny's magic, but we didn't really establish where that came from. Dawvish had an idea. He had a thing going on, and I just wanted to do it, because, you know, why not? As long as it was a script that was the right length, and did not contradict anything I had previously said, or intended to say, I let it fly. That happened a lot in season 2, it happened in later seasons, we actually didn't reject very many scripts. I don't think we fully rejected just anything. There's a lot of scripts that came in and we, not a lot. There were some scripts that came in, like a couple, that we said, well, this and this and this you can do, but this one is going to mess up some other plot line we're planning to do, so if you can take out that, that would be great. You know, that's what would happen with writers who weren't senior writers, who weren't in on the main plot line, because they would develop these, that we would get people who would just come in with stuff that kind of contradicted, like, hey, this is something that happened. And we were like, so you don't know this, but something happens that makes that not happen. So we can't really run the script. Sorry about that. I do remember doing that a couple times. Later in the seasons, when we started doing more plots that were more serial, that the plot lines went on for several episodes and had repercussions and things like that. Doesn't happen a lot in season two. So anyway, this script, Dalian Cut is introduced. He's a big badass. He kills Toad. He just outright kills them. There's no, like, we shot a Toad, and we're not going to follow up as to whether he's dead or alive and just run in the other direction like the show does. He would just straight up kill them. And he fights the Righteous, and eventually they figure out that they should not be fighting him, and he figures out he should not be fighting them. And he's got this thing going on with Jenny. It's not really a romance thing. It's more of a magic thing. This will come up in later episodes. And then he explains, like, oh my god, I'm looking through this now. He has a lot of dialogue that says, this stain on your throat will forever be a stain on my soul. And then he runs off. Wow. Just think about that. Think about that right there. Anyway. Next episode. Findings. This is another Pharaoh script. Air date 11/19/98. What the hell is this script about? I don't remember at all. Oh, yeah. This is the boring one, I think. Okay, so this is another Aldebaran script. I think at this point we were in contact with Claudia. We had these Aldebaran things, but hadn't fully introduced, like, this is the Aldebaran universe, and this is going to be the main plot from now on. Instead, we were still kind of running with, what are our ideas for Aldebaran that aren't this massive thing that Claudia has and wants to do, because her script hadn't aired yet. And these are all written ahead, by the way, for the most part. So, Pharaoh with a script in which, I don't know, there's some magical creature named the Boren who's, like, trapped in a ring, and he gets out and sort of almost kills everybody on Aldebaran, and really sort of goes on a merry chase with him and sneaks him into his... He only does this in this episode. It's actually pretty clever. The Boren sort of feeds on people's energy, and he's feeding him all the Aldebaran's energy, and Willy's like, I have energy too, you should follow me. And then he follows him, and then Willy goes back into his bedroom, in his dimension, and then he's like, follow me into this. And then, like, the Boren does, because who is saying, like, oh, if I go through this door, I end up in another dimension that's totally unrelated to the previous one. And then Willy just shuts down the connection, it's like, now you're in my dimension, and there's nothing to feed on. And the Boren sort of fades away, he's like, So it's actually pretty brilliant. The more I think about that, it's pretty funny that is how Willy defeated him, was like just tricking him into going. We very rarely did things like that. I probably would have done it more had I thought about it, but we very rarely did that. And we see Willy's parents. I don't know if we've seen them yet. I don't remember, but we vaguely seen them. And this is kind of a funny scene. They ask him, hey, so what's up with, like, the fact that you're injured? Because his parents are very, very, very bad parents. They're not mean or anything. They actually love him very much. They are just terrible at parenting. They should have their parent license revoked. They never seem to notice that he has this non-existent job he claims is at the wharf. They never visited. He's gone for, like, days. There's one point where he's gone for 3 months. And after that, they're like, maybe we should look into what Willy is doing. And then, you know, that plot line didn't go so well. But they're just completely spaced out. They grow pot in their backyard, and they run a crystal shop. I think Willie gets his magic from his mother and its intelligence from his father, who used to work on a photon accelerator experiment that didn't work. And that's how Willie got those plans, and that's how he built the photon accelerator, and his did work, but it took him to another dimension, and he just never told his parents. And this one, there's a scene here where he just actually tells them what happened. Like, I was fighting a quark demon, and that's how I got injured. And they just look at him and continue their go. So, this is the last Aldebaran script, I think, before Claudia gets involved. Yeah, it is. Okay, I'm looking at it now. A Stranger Among Us. Air date 12/13/1998. This was the first script that Pharaoh and I did together. I don't remember exactly how we coordinated. Generally, when we would do scripts, we would sort of have the idea, one of us would have the idea, and we'd be like, hey, I kind of want to do this script, but I don't have enough material for it. Here's all of the scenes I've written. Can anyone else, like, contribute to this? And then someone else would come in and say, hey, I can throw in this plotline that I wanted to do, but also didn't fill out an entire script. And then they would write that, and it would pass back and forth until it was done. We did this very quickly. This wasn't a complex thing that we did. Ah, use the word complex. Okay, complex is the name of the computer on this show that is evil. And I said this is okay instead of with the C. And I just want to mention at some point, Willie mentions vegetarian food, that this is very strange. We sort of never established whether people in the universe eat meat, because that seems like it would be weird because they're all animals, but some of them are animals who are carnivores, so they should only be eating meat. And really, it seems that a lot of the characters in The Righteous are not carnivores, so they're just like eating bananas or eating carrots or whatever, which is not a full protein diet or whatever. But some of those characters should be eating meat all the time. And I don't know, that I should be eating breadcrumbs. So they should just, like, take a bunch of bread and throw in crumbs and just have Deadeye eat them because Deadeye is a duck. So we haven't really established whether Willie is a vegetarian or if he's eating meat there or there is meat. I know that when I ran a LARP at Brown University based in this universe, I did establish in the LARP that there were non-sentient, you know, animals on planets that were like animals on our planet, and that people killed them and ate them for food. So if you were a creature who would be eating meat, like a lion or something, you would be eating meat, because that makes sense. But we didn't think it out too much in this series, so it's a little inconsistent. I don't think really, he does hate that his parents are vegetarian, though they occasionally appear to be vegan, but they are not actually vegan full time. It just depends on who's writing the script. He does not like tofu. Even though the TV show seems to indicate that he does, I don't know what's up with that. We should have been more consistent about that. It's not really a major thing, though. Shira comes back up in this episode, and Willie tries to sort out whether Jenny and Bucky are, like, together or whatever. They're his surrogate parents, so he's kind of concerned. Bucky, Jenny, and Willie, and really Nene, become the central characters of the series. Obviously, Willie is you can do the most with him, because he's outside the universe, so everyone has to explain everything to him, like, oh, well, why are we going to this planet? What's up with this? And then they explain. Or, what is this technology? And then they explain. So, you know, he's kind of concerned about that. And then there's just a really dumb plot line that I'm pretty sure I wrote. I think it wasn't Pharaoh. When she just, like, loses his glasses for a while, and Shira pretends to be Jenny to, like, get things out of him, like, to steal stuff from his room. And he has dog tags, by the way. This episode mentions, not, like, it said he has military-type dog tags, but really is becoming somewhat part of the military. This grows as a theme, sort of a hidden, not hidden, but theme that we thought about and put in but didn't make it a plot, is that Willie increasingly becomes part of the military. And Willie just sort of slams around because he hasn't seen her glasses, and Shira steals from him, and gets knocked unconscious, which everyone on the show gets knocked unconscious, I don't know, like once an episode, maybe? I don't know how they all can even tie their own shoes. By the end of the series, they have taken so many blows to the head, or blows to the back of the neck, or been shot with stun guns. I just assume that everyone's blaster is on stun. Because, you know, the original show didn't really want to do violence with blood. It couldn't do violence with blood. So everyone just had these lasers, and you shoot the laser, and the guy falls down. And then there's no explanation as to what happens to him. And we kind of tried to do that for a while. It becomes very obvious when we stop doing that. Like, when people are actually getting murdered, we make it pretty clear. People are getting murdered here. So, there's something up with the Indians. And then Guile gets mistaken for his uncle, Al McGator, which I think Pharaoh wrote, because Pharaoh wrote those characters, because Willie doesn't have his glasses on, and his vision is very bad. And he's like, oh, look, a giant alligator, who actually Plesiosaur is the technical name for their species, but he would probably think, like, here's a giant alligator who's purple. Oh, no, it's Al McGator, that guy who, like, is a problem for us. And then it's like, no, it's his nephew who doesn't know he's his nephew. But he looks the same, so, and then he just apologizes for, like, the rest of the episode. But Shira, like, just starts stealing from them, and turns out to be bad, and it ends up connecting Bucky and Jenny a little bit. Or just gets Shira out of the way. I mean, she was always a temporary character. We always didn't want to do a lot with her. She was just introduced to kind of be like, well, Bucky's not really with Jenny, so he's with Shira now. And now she's evil, and now he's not, and he's going to get together with Jenny, but it's going to be, like, a big uphill battle. Because they both have a lot of issues, and neither of them are particularly mature. They're basically, I think everyone on this show is basically a huge fuck-up, except for Fritz Warner, who's very good at what he does. Like, the Toads are bad at doing what they do. They're very bad at conquering the universe. They haven't done it yet. And Bucky O'Hare walks into every single trap. It becomes a running joke, really, on the TV show, but we actually physically say things like, characters say, well, we're gonna walk into a trap because we have Bucky O'Hare in the group, and that's what he does. Or, like, they say, this is a trap, and he's like, I know, but I'm Bucky O'Hare, so we're gonna walk into it. That's what he does. That's how much of a fuck up he is. And his life is not together at all, as we learn later on in the series. He really does not have it together. So, but their incompetence kind of rules each other out. So they both kind of fail at what they're doing. So Bucky, like, succeeds, but only because everyone is so bad at aiming that he gets away. That is what happens a lot of the time. Toadborg's pretty competent, but he fouls up a lot. Like, apparently in the Toad military, as long as you don't get killed, you can, like, screw up major things. And Toadborg's really mad at you, but he won't really do anything. He'll just be like, oh, you know that thing you screwed up last time? Well, don't screw up this time, and then you screw up. But then someone else comes up, well, we're worse than you, and they're like, what? Complex is like, well, Toadborg, you really screwed this up. But the Air Marshal screwed this up, so, like, the Toadborg and the Air Marshal are kind of in charge of screwing up repeatedly so that the other one is getting blamed, and then the heat is taken off him because the other person screws up. So, like, a repeated line of just no one learns anything. There is no long-term learning in this show. This changes a little in the final season, but not really. So anyway, Assassins. By Claudia Kranza. Additions with Josh Kaufman. I don't know who the hell that is. That must have been Claudia's boyfriend. Or husband. And CJ Kranza. I don't know who that is either. Edited by DJ Clausen. That means that I had something to do with it. When it says edited by Rygar, it means that it was done, like, much later when he came in 03 and edited everything for grammatical mistakes. But if it says edited by DJ Clausen, that means that I just had something to say, but I didn't necessarily write a scene. Like, that I didn't... I had some kind of creative control over the script. I did something other than look at the script and say, okay, this is fine. This is the introduction of the major Aldebaran plot, which is this. There's, like, all of these orders of sisters, and they all have male slave harems, which was never a part of it that I was particularly cool with, but I kind of let fly. It doesn't show up when I'm running the series, but the second half of the series, when Rygar's running it, it shows up, because I think he just forgot to say, don't do this. It's weird. I don't know. He was in charge, so that was his call. But, and this is all sent to me in like tremendous detail. All the different orders and what they were about, and one of the orders is all lesbian, and this had to be mentioned to me. And he's created a very queer-friendly universe. I'm kind of proud of that. But sometimes it was just unnecessary to mention, like, and this order is so anti-male that they're just all lesbian. And they're like, oh, okay, fine. You thought that out. That's good for you. Let's not bring that up in this cartoon show spin-off fanfic. So anyway, this opens with a bunch of people in the thought order who all seem to have names that are names of girls you would hate in high school, like Kathy and Kelly and Trisha. I love that they all had those names, which are all short names of their real names because you're not supposed to know an old girl's real name. Jenny, for example. Her real name is Jennifer. Somehow you're not supposed to know that. No one ever calls her Jennifer without major consequences. But, you know, that is her real name, Jennifer. But that's kind of the thing. Well, everyone's name is shortened. Tommy's real name is Thomas. Sometimes they're not shortened, obviously. But they're shortened. So they all decide, like, this one order gets together, and it's like, well, we know that Willie has magic, but he's male, so we should murder him. And I don't know why the queen kind of signs off on this, but she does. And the queen of Aldebaran, who is a character from the original show, this is the introduction of her son, who she actually raised as her daughter until he hit puberty, and then she put him into hiding. And then he started the male resistance. And he's the only male cat who has any magical training. There's a bunch of other magical male cats who are underground because they're supposed to be killed at birth. But he's the only one with serious magical training. And he's also kind of a jerk a little bit. He's kind of rough around the edges as a character, even though he goes through a lot, and I liked him as a person. I liked him as a character. Also, he's gay. He's bi, I think. He's definitely together with Ponce. That becomes a thing. Then Ponce dies. And I don't remember if he's actually together with Archie's. I don't know. But he has a son, but that's kind of irrelevant. Eventually, he has a son. So, Tommy's introduced in this, and it's another, like, I don't know what. We were all into this. We were all into trying to kill Willie, but not successfully killing him. Willie goes through so much in this web series. Eventually, we just, like, did it in a massive way that would traumatize him for the whole season. Like, there's just whole seasons where he's just completely traumatized. But in this season, we just do it every episode, and somehow he bounces back. Willie's also much younger in this season. Looking back on it, after we read it in the last couple days, we actually had a hurricane here, that's why I'm doing this podcast. Board. Willie did a lot of things that were very representative of someone who was 14, and later on, he does things that are much more mature, because in this season, he's still very much the kid who, from the previous season, from the TV show, and he grows up a lot over the course of the show, just naturally, just the way that we wrote him, but also just kind of the way that we were writing. He does more and more emotionally, and sometimes they comment on it, and sometimes it just happens naturally, and no one says anything, or even thinks about it, really. Oh yeah, Sandy, another character. Sandy, Shelly, Kathy, God, if I knew these girls from high school, I would have hated them. So anyway, they go to assassinate Willie, because he's male. I don't know why this bothers them, didn't bother them before, I think because this is Claudia's first script. And he is saved by Tommy, but he doesn't know that he is. There's kind of, no one's really sure what happened there, and Jenny is like, well, of course you weren't saved by a guy, because you don't have any guys who are male, and also have magic on our planet. And I haven't explained to you why that is. I've never felt compelled to say that. We learn that Jenny is pretty much on board with this whole, like, male domination thing. Which is not cool, but everyone calls her out on it not being cool. So, she fights with Kathy. Kathy leaves, or I think they knock her out, and then this isn't one of the episodes where they knock her out and they just don't find the body. This is one of the episodes where she just gets, like, disciplined, like, hey, don't do that. We're mad at you. Because she's still kind of looking to the queen at this point. And this is also an episode where Buffy kind of figures out that Willie has magic, and is really, it's just like, aha, I actually figured something out. You never tell me anything. And That's pretty great. That Buffy actually got in on something. Shaken, not stirred. Airdate 1/10/99. So this is an example of why you shouldn't have me do every single script. Because I don't necessarily... I just came up with anything that I came up with basically aired. I don't think I rejected anything for myself. And this episode is actually... I reread it yesterday. It is actually pretty funny. It's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. And it's a combination of two influences. One is the movie Sphere, which was inspired by a much better book by Michael Crichton called Sphere, which is about these jellyfish that suck on your thoughts and then put you in fantasies. And I put that badly, but it's actually, I think, Crichton's best book. Michael Crichton's best book. Jurassic Park is sort of a mess. And it was turned into a movie shortly before I wrote this, I think. Or it was turned into a movie at some point with Dustin Hoffman, and it didn't do so well. It was sort of a mediocre movie. But that show was a big, that movie was a big inspiration for this one. And also, the other one, obviously, James Bond. So what happens is they go to whatever planets, do whatever. Something like, we have to go fix something, or it's something very minor. I don't think the toads are really in this one. And there's all of these, like, jellyfish floating around. And the other people who are stranded there are like, we don't know what's up with them. And Lily's like, I think they're awesome, because I think everything is awesome, because I am very naive. I'm also not racist, like everyone else in this series. So, the mounts are just like, huh. Mounts are the names of the little creatures that float around. Now it's just like, huh, we've never chased a deer before. So they just sort of feed off of it. And Deadeye and Jenny, which is not a team that we see very often, decide to use Jenny's magic to go into Lily's head sort of by accident. They're trying to sever the connection between Alex and Lily. And they end up in Lily's Dreamland, which is apparently a Bond film. Sean Connery has a brief appearance as a dealer at a Jack Blackjack table, and Lily is 007. This is very funny because, obviously, he would never be 007. He has a British accent. He refers to Deadeye as D when they eventually convince him that they're, like, some kind of American because of their accents. Agents and... Roger Moore also is like a server or something. And Deadeye, who's been watching all the films with Lily, is just, because they do things when they're all time together. Like, this crew just hangs out. Like, I think that this is something from Lily's dimension. Who else is in this? Pierce Brosnan is also a server. I see that in. The Air Marshal is the bad guy, who complains about Lily's clever quips, because, you know, Lily's 007. And at British Intelligence Headquarters, Chris Warner is M. I don't think anyone is Moneypenny, though I might have thought at this point that Moneypenny and M were the same person, because Moneypenny was not a major character in the Pierce Brosnan show, in the Pierce Brosnan movies, which were airing at this time. So anyway, there's men to Moscow, Germany, you go to Berlin, and Bucky is Q. This is very important, Bucky is Q. Q being the extremely nerdy character from the show, from the movies, he has become Q in Lily's head. This was just the only thing that I thought was truly creative about this. And anyway, they go through some, like, plotline that involves compounds getting blown up and stuff like that, and eventually they kind of convince Lily that he should get killed or something so that he won't get out of his own dream. And it works, and Lily has no memory of any of this later on, and Deadeye and Jenny just decide to never tell him what happened, because it does be better if he never knew that they were messing around in his dream, and he doesn't have, like, an embarrassing dream. I mean, just dreaming you're in a Bond film is not nearly as embarrassing as a million other things. And they never tell Buffy either. It's just like, once they get out of it, it's just like, nothing really happens. I do this a couple times. With things that are embarrassing or too revealing it. But later on, characters just like, let's never talk about this again. So, anyway, that's Shaken, Not Stirred. Nothing But the Truth. $124.99. I don't remember really why I did. I remember being really psyched for this episode. It's very long. And basically, it's that Deadeye kind of gets involved with pirate things again, and someone has to steal something from his ship, and he's cool with that, but Louie gets hurt in the meantime, because of course he does. And Deadeye feels really bad about it, and no one quite knows what happens for a while, and they think that Deadeye has kind of turned on them, and that's kind of the episode. Also, there's something mentioned here that I think only comes up in one other script very late in this series, which is called the Bear-Toad Alliance, because I was so brilliant about that. Apparently, the bears wanted to buy things from the Corsair Canards so that they could sell them to the toads, because the bears were aligned with the toads, because, yeah, of course, why not? I don't know what... The BTA never comes up again formally. There just is another bear who's evil later on in the series. Very late in the series. But it's just the stupidest thing, I think, that I invented ever. The Bear-Toad Alliance. What the fuck was I thinking? I don't know what I was thinking about. It's just, it's dumb. It's dumb. I can't apologize for it. It's dumb. Eventually they figure out, you know, Deadeye is not actually evil. Just things kind of went wrong and he tried to correct it and didn't go so well. That's nothing but the truth. Military Discipline. 2799. This is another episode that I was really psyched about and so proud of, and I don't think I fouled up this episode that much. It's just not that important to the long run of things. Though it does introduce a character that, even though we're not going to see him again, he's going to be important. We only see him once more, and that's in a flashback, which is Admiral Hudson, who doesn't really make sense because he seems to be ranking higher than Bucky, yet we never see him in the fleet. So, I don't really know how the fleet kind of works in that respect, because there only seem to be three captains and three ships. And only one of them is ranked commander, which is above captain, which is Dogstar, who's been in the Navy for long. There seems to be a larger Navy in this one that does something, and is not really mentioned again, because it didn't make sense. So we didn't bring it up. And Admiral Hudson is the guy who, we eventually learned that he sort of replaced Bucky's dad in Bucky's life after Bucky's father died. Bucky's father was a military guy, even though there was no war. He was in the... Home Guard or the Warrior in Home... He was in, like, some kind of, you know, national defense thing. And he trained with Hudson, and they were very alike. And he died when Bucky was about 15. And it's very, very traumatic, and it's one of the reasons that Bucky fights the Toads. And so Bucky joined the academy, this famous academy, and Hudson kind of helped him through it. So Hudson's a big deal to Bucky, and he shows up, and Hudson is just like, what the hell's going on here? You've got, like, someone from another dimension who is, like, ashamed of that boon, who seems to be drunk, and also goes to grade school. You've got, like, a witch running your ship, and she won't tell you anything about magic. You've got a baboon that you don't see the need. I don't remember what he says about Bruiser. You've got a duck who is a pirate, like openly a pirate, and still does pirate things even though he's on your ship. What the hell is going on here? This is the most stupid thing that I can't possibly sign off on it. And Bucky just is crushed. He is totally crushed. Really also gets drunk in this one in a way that doesn't make sense at all. I try and establish that alcohol only works in him and not other people. Though later on, people get plenty drunk in this show. So just ignore that discrepancy for a while. But he does get really gets drunk for the first time in his life the night that Hudson is there. And, you know, it's a comedy of errors, sort of. It's not very funny. And the main point is that just Bucky is just crushed about this whole thing, and he goes to Fritz, Bucky and Fritz sort of they're sort of friends, and they're sort of father-son, but they're not really as father-son as other people that Bucky has chosen as surrogate parents in his life. Mainly because Fritz is pretty immature in some respects and doesn't really want to be Bucky's dad. But, Fritz and Hudson just hate each other. for reasons that should be obvious. I mean, one of them is a politician who used to be an actor, and the other one is a military guy who's super serious. So they totally hate each other. So Fritz kind of sets up that they have to do, like, something to, like, impress Hudson with how well they speak codes, and they do, and he's impressed enough for them to realize that he's full of shit and they should not listen to him anymore. This is also the only appearance of Ren Warner, who is another member of the Warner clan. His real class name is not Warner. He just introduces Ren. He's from Lithuania. And he is Ren from Ren and Stimpy. I didn't care for Stimpy, so I didn't put him in this cast. It's a very, very strange cast, but I will get to explaining what that was like. Oh, Hulk. He is the last name Hulk. Ren Hulk. He's actually being Lithuanian in one episode of Ren and Stimpy. And he's in this for some reason. I stuck him in. He was supposed to do something. He really didn't. This is also the only... This is, the episode where Buffy, at the end, he is wearing, like, a military-looking shirt that he can wear when he's not in his gigantic baboon costume, so that he looks like he's in the military, which signifies, you know, things, obviously. His growing respect for Willie as a person, and his transition to being a military figure, kind of, even though he doesn't really shoot anyone until, like, season 5 or 4, something like that, he doesn't really use guns. Alright, so that's that. Now we don't see Hudson again until flashback, thank God. Blood Ties. Air date 2/21/99. I did this one with Claudia. I had a lot. Additions again by Jeff Kaufman and CJ Carranza, whoever the hell they are. Obviously, people for friends and family had some contribution to this, but she, I think I remember now that she said she talked it out with people that she knew in real life, and that's how she felt with that. So it's another Aldebaran episode. We've actually had a lot in this season, just because we had so many people coming in with Aldebaran stuff, because it was such an obvious thing to do. It's just an obvious jumping off point of this whole planet where there are cats who are magical and it's secret. You know, how can you not do a ton of stuff about that? So anyway, the Queen leaves her memory journal around, which is a dumb thing to do, and it's found by Cassie, who's evil. That is not good. Cassie finds out that that Jenny is the child of, is the twin child of Queen. She's actually the princess of Aldebaran, and she doesn't know it. And that Tommy was raised as man, and Jenny was sent to an orphanage to get raised as. Okay, so here we are. Katrina had 2 children. She actually had a child before that who's dead, and that's where Felicia comes from. Felicia's granddaughter of the Queen. But anyway, the Queen had 2 head twins. One of them was Tommy, and one of them was Jenny. One of them had to be quote-unquote killed because it was male, so she dumped Jenny off in an orphanage and raised Tommy as a girl named Tammy, which worked until Tommy hit puberty and then Tammy died of a mysterious illness. And Tommy had to run away. And then I found the notices, and Jenny doesn't know any of this yet. She just thinks, like, I grew up in an orphanage, because that's what happens to people if they grow up in orphanages. And she gets called in by the Queen, and the Queen is like, oh, this is kind of a problem. The throne is not so secure. And God, what else happens in this one? Buffy, I think Willie stuck at his grandma's house. I think I did that. I don't remember why. But it's when he's not around until, like, the very end of the episode. I don't know why. It's kind of just frustrated that he was always available, I think. And it's like, no, Willie has to sometimes do things. Also, this is the introduction of the Thought Order, who become very, very important very soon. And then they do this generator thing, and, like, magical people shouldn't be around it. And then Willie shows up, like, hey, guys, I just got back to my grandma's house. Boom! So the generator blows up, and he's magical too. And Kathy is supposedly killed in the blast because people are dumb in this universe and don't think to look for bodies. Obviously, she's fine. So that's that. Defection by Alice. $3,799. Elf only wrote one script, submitted it. I liked it, said it was fun, and we aired. That's it. It's really the whole story behind that script. This is a script that highlights the fact that everyone is pretty racist in the Annaverse, except for Willy, because he's not from the Annaverse. So this toad named Horst, I don't remember what happens to him in the long run, but he's mentioned from time to time. This toad defects, and nobody trusts him, and they really treat him like shit. And Willy, who's on the ship, is like, hey, let's treat him like a human being. I mean, he's not a human being, he's a toad. But let's treat him like a human being. Let's give him clothing after we take all the clothing because we think that it's, like, poisoned or something. And let's give him, like, food and water and stuff like that. And not push him out of the airlock. And he even accompanies him when he gets sent to, like, be interrogated, even though it's not a very tough interrogation. He's like tortured. And then Horst eventually decides, based on the fact that Willy has not been a dick to him, that maybe he should rethink the fact that he is actually going to do something terrible. I'm not really sure what it was, but, I mean, that part was never clear to me, but he has a thing implanted in a tracking device implanted under his skin. So he just reveals this at some point. He's like, hey, Willy, so I actually was a defector, and now I actually am. So be nice to people is sort of the thing in this script, and they do surgery to get it out, and then he's fine. And Willy is kind of disgusted with everyone, appropriately, for being total racist. And they are just like, well, we're in a war, whatever. This is also the instruction of Detective Miller. I'm sorry, Detective Mueller. In real life, a Mueller is a glass thing you use to crush pigments for painting. But Mueller is a goat, and there's some funny visual gags with Mueller that I'm pretty sure we did. I'm not 100% sure we actually did them. There's one where he's doing an interrogation. He's not a very bad guy. Like, he doesn't do great. His interrogations, he's a pretty straightforward investigator. And he's sitting there, and there's, like, a giant mattress next to him, and he's just occasionally biting off a piece and then eating it and chewing it for a really long time because he's a goat. And I think we did that somewhere. If we didn't, it's really a shame. We made at least one, like, tin can reference video. There's sort of this stereotype that for some reason ghosts like to chew on tin cans. But anyway, in this one we learned that everyone is racist. And looking back, it was a pretty good script to run for season 2. I'm glad that it was submitted. Little Green Toes. $321.99. Just what the fuck with this one? This was not as bad, again, this was not as bad as I remembered it being. When I went to read it yesterday, I was like, oh, some of this works. Basically, they decide to hide this guy named Dorkins, which is named after a principal I had, who I did not think to call on her name, Principal Dorkins. We did not think to use the word dork to make fun of her. We made fun of her in really stupid ways, but we just didn't think to use her name. It was a bizarre happening in my life that I had a principal named Dorkin, and, well, alternately called Dorkin and Dorkins in this script. I don't remember whether she was Dorkin or Dorkins, but we were not good at making fun of her. So anyway, Dorkins is one of the Toad creators who is affected, and the other creators of Complex are getting killed, so they decide to brilliantly hide him in Willy's universe. And, that is not a good idea at all. I mean, I don't know how we figured out that, like, that this would be a good idea because he doesn't have the right build to be a passive human no matter how much makeup he wears, but he somehow does this. And these two guys from the FBI, and he goes to live in Willy's universe, and these two FBI people who are Mulder and Scully, but with different names, and I wasn't really trying to hide that in any way. I just didn't use the word names, Mulder and Scully. They somehow get suspicious about him in some way. And then there's a kind of like a chase around where they're just like, alright, someone's out with this kid and this guy whose name is Green. Dr. Green, why is he only 4 feet tall? And I don't remember what the whole thing was about. Oh no, wait, I'm totally wrong. Jordan's the name was the high school teacher, which makes much more sense now. On Earth, that the high school that Willie goes to. And he's been there's been a murder in his school, and that's how the FBI gets called in, and Dr. Green is still alive, or something like that, and he's the toad. God, I screwed this up. I screwed up the summary. And Willie kind of has to protect him, and the FBI are just like, what is going on with this weird guy? And then, so he goes back to the universe, like, hey, we kind of said we would protect this guy. We kind of put it into witness protection on my planet, and he's going to be killed by the regens who are capable of getting to Earth. Just they don't go there very often. And so Buffy's like, alright, I'll go protect him. And I don't know why he thought to do that, but it ends up being a pretty funny scene where, and I think this is the episode where we learn Willie's mother's first name, which is Susan. She didn't have a first name in the show. Susan is my middle name. That's the explanation behind it. And it seemed like a good name for her. Dr. DeWitt, Willie's dad, is named David. I don't remember if that is from the comic or the TV show or if I made that up. But Bucky goes to protect the teacher who is a toad from regens, and like the FBI guy shows up, and the Mulder version FBI guy shows up, and he's just like, you're a 3 foot tall hare. I can't get over this. Like, it just blew my mind, which it would when you think about it. If a 3 foot tall anthropomorphic hare was walking around the apartment in San Francisco, that would freak you out. And then the MIB show up for some reason and just blast him with this emergency. Okay, so the MIB come in. It's not because of the STEM, but how many secret agents are there with, you know, pen cams that make you forget everything? And they make the agents forget everything. We never see them again either. This trip is really all over the place. Also, there's a character in here named Nathan Bridger, and he becomes captain of the Sequest later on. This is a Sequest crossover too. Just don't let me do things. I have bad ideas sometimes. There is a funny scene though where Willie gets arrested, and because he's just like trying to protect, he's standing outside trying to protect Dr. Green, and he's got like a pipe, a lead pipe, and the cop shows up. Just some random patrol cop shows up and is just like, why are you hanging around this guy's house with a lead pipe? And so he arrests Willie for just being there, and the lizard finally shows up to kill Dr. Green. He is killed by Lucas, who has been hiding but last time we saw Lucas, he escapes back into the universe where he's from. He's the human character that didn't work out. And now he's shown up to kind of help out, because he is human and can do that. And he kills the lizard and then goes back to the universe because he just came in to like get clothing that was human size and then went back to the universe. Like, he doesn't really have a great desire to keep going back and forth. It's mentioned briefly that he had a very bad childhood. He's from Tennessee, by the way. And that he doesn't want to go back. But he has no desire to be on Earth. Really, he's got everything going for him in the universe. And he gets Willie out of... He doesn't go to jail. He just gets him out of the squad car. And I don't remember what happens to the policeman. Presumably he comes back and is like, why did that kid leave my squad car? But I don't know, we didn't follow up on that. And also, I think this is the episode where Lucas plays Bucky O'Hare, because they're just like, well, who's this Bucky O'Hare guy that you work for? And then Lucas just plays him. And it's just like, I'm Bucky O'Hare. I'm a guy. Clearly I am not a green hair. So I'm Bucky O'Hare. No, it happens in the script. God. This summary's all over the place. I gotta focus a little bit more. And this time he takes the rap for murdering Dr. Green or Dr. Ward or something like that. or just say, and then he goes back to the universe, so they're never going to find it. I don't know. This script is a mess. Oh my god, this is why you don't let me write every script, because I will take every idea, good or bad, and just run it. Alright, next episode. Storm Toad. 4499. This is the Pharaoh script. Again, Pharaoh does introduce characters, but usually very small ones, or they're very small introductions to fit right into the show. Like, he introduces Cyberstorm, who is a toad robot who's capable of changing weather patterns on planets, which makes sense because toads also build weather converters. That's kind of the thing that they do. It's very successful in destroying planets, pretty much. Though they never actually destroy any planets, it always sort of fouls up at the end. So they build this Cyberstorm. Cyberstorm does stuff. It's bad. They fight him. They win. That is all I remember about this script. There's really nothing else that I have to say. This is not a knock on Pharaoh at all. I just, I'm not that involved with this script. It looks fine to me. We read it. Traditions. 4-18-99. I wrote this script with Claudia. It heavily involves her male resistance plot line. That's understandable. I don't remember which one part I wrote and which part she wrote. It may have been that I wrote the whole thing and then she edited it, or I think I wrote a lot of it. I wrote at least half. So basically, the male resistance on Eldebaran, it's not really going well. They have 20 people. Second, like, Tommy's the only one who can really do magic very well. They have nothing going for them. And they're like, hey, so there's one person who's male and he's been allowed to study magic and that's really do it and he knows nothing about us. Let's kidnap him and teach him all about us. And that works out pretty well on their end because they show him the movies and the videos and it's just like, hey, you know this planet that you think is awesome that you've been visiting? It's actually terrible. And, he gets rescued. Well, he gets rescued, but, okay, so there's, the way that he gets rescued is actually kind of clever. It makes me sad that Lucas didn't turn out a good character. The way that he gets anyone to know where he is that he can only contact other males who have magic. And he contacts Lucas, because Lucas is human, and therefore has magic. And he just wakes Lucas up in the middle of the night with telepathic message, just like, hey, I'm stuck on Aldebaran. I can only contact men. Go find Jenny and tell her where I am. Which Lucas immediately does, so he's very, very annoyed about it. And then he leaves. That's basically his whole thing, but it's actually pretty clever, because Lily's like, well, there is one other male who could have magic in the universe who's not the guys who are kidnapping me, and it's that other human being. So let me contact him. So they go to rescue Lily, and Bucky is not given much information about why he's rescuing Lily or what's going on. Jenny doesn't really have the information, but she wouldn't give it to him anyway. So they rescue him, and he is like, what the fuck is going on in this planet? Like, he really lays into Jenny. I was just like, what is up with this? Like, you enslave all males? I'm not cool with that. That sounds terrible. And Jenny's response is, well, it's our culture. Go, you know. She doesn't really say, how dare you judge us, but basically she's just like, this is our culture. Shut up. And he did not take this well, obviously. And he talks to Bucky about it without saying what it's about pretty successfully. And he's just like, well, Jenny and I don't really agree on something. It's kind of major. Like, something that we should really clear up, and we can't. And you put out the blob of Jenny's shit with all of that. And Bucky, I don't know, gives a speech that kind of convinces Lily to make up with Jenny for the time being, just to clear the air and make the ship runnable, because you can't have them fighting and make the ship runnable. As we learn in later seasons, do not have people on your ship fighting when you are trying to run a ship that has a very small crew, but needs to do things. So, Lily is very swayed to the whole male resistance side, and Jenny learns that, I think she learns that Tommy is her brother, and that kind of freaks her out. But she still does not, like, go over and say, oh, I guess my culture was wrong. Because that's pretty much, that would be a weird thing, you know, for her to do that at 180. This is the beginning of her change towards, maybe my culture was terrible and we should think about this. But it's going to take a while. Lost Generations. Air date 5/2/99. This is another script that I was so proud of, and it's not good, and I'm so disgusted that I did it. So, just to be clear, it's not actually that bad, but it is. Basically, they're testing the Mark 5 accelerator. I don't know what marks mean. 5 is higher than 4. So, it's what Willie's building, and accidentally rips a hole in space and time, and they go 20 years in the future, and learn what happened to him. And Bucky and Deadeye, again, apparently we don't see too often, go out, leave the ship to go find what the hell, where the hell they are, and meet Bucky's daughter, who is obviously Jenny's daughter, though this has to be spelled out for him later on, because he's dumb. I mean, everyone on the show is pretty dumb, except for Willie. Who is a UAC rebel, and the Time Wars have been won. Bucky's an admiral, and Admiral O'Hare, who's married to Jenny. Frith is ruling the universe. So, that's significant, but that doesn't really strike Bucky as being something he should follow up on. But actually, I don't think he learns that. I don't think he actually learns that. Like, we learn it. Other characters are mentioning it, but Bucky doesn't directly learn it. And we also see Willie, who's gay. Just outright. We don't actually say it, but we say everything we could say without saying Willie is gay and married to a guy. Because Willie makes an adult, His husband makes an appearance. We don't mention that he's his husband, we just mention that he's married, but he has a kid and there's some reason for that, and he doesn't want to explain it when he meets his younger self. This was like something that we always plan to do. Willie is gay, it's not really a thing at his age at the moment. Like, he's 14 years old. It's not really totally relevant to him. It hasn't come up in his life really yet. He's been so consumed with everything else. He's a little behind on our whole schedule of, like, meeting people his age and things like that. But that was always a thing. At the very end of the series, because I was no longer writing it, he set up with a girl. So I would just say, you know, I wouldn't have done that. I would just been like, hey, Willie's been, like, gay for the whole series. We haven't really mentioned it, except for this one episode, but this is like a thing senior writers know. But I wasn't involved that much in season 5, so I have no right to step on it and say, you shouldn't have done this. And also, sexuality is a very fluid thing, especially when you're younger. So, anyway, so he meets his older self eventually, and his older self is gay. So not like, not very cutting age, very, very, a very straight gay guy. Because you don't have to write. There's one really family gay guy in the original series named Smata. It's never established in the original series that he's gay because he is a cartoon show, but he is for some reason a walking gay stereotype in every possible way. We don't know what. He's a toad. We don't know what was up with that. All we did with that in this series is made constant jokes on his behalf. Not like derogatory, like we don't approve of his sexuality jokes, but like jokes about his clothing and hair and stuff. Just, for some reason, Mimi has figured it out and just makes jokes whenever his name pops up. And she's like, what, did you check the fashion accessory store or something like that? It's better when it's in the script. So this is also the first episode that we figure out that no one else figures this out. Even though it's pretty much outright stated. But it's not stated in front of the characters who are going to make it home. Which is that Fritz is actually a god, and he will eventually rule the Empress. So, he is actually the god Fritz, the sun god, and he will eventually rule the universe. And Lucas, who also is in this episode as a high priest, is totally right about that. Lucas, again, making an appearance because I really thought he was going to be useful. He ends up just coming across again as a dick. Doesn't contribute much. There's a theocracy on Genus. This isn't portrayed as good or bad, it just is. And anyway, eventually the adult Lily is like, oh yeah, I kind of remember that the Mark V accelerator could like send you into the future if you crossed wires. Hey, younger self, go uncross these wires and go back to your time. And then I think they forget everything that they've seen because otherwise their heads would explode. And, but also in the future, Shantae, who is definitely a name given to her by, yeah, Claudia gave her that name. That's not a name I would have given her. It's a fine name. I just never would have thought of that. Or Shantae. I don't even know how to pronounce her name. Bucky's daughter. But she and Bucky make up. So that really works out. But they all, the current cast, they totally forget what day happened to them. So this is obviously, this is kind of a problematic episode. It played a, showed a lot of cards in our hand that we couldn't otherwise show, so that was a good reason to do it. It's just like, here are some things about the universe that you couldn't possibly find out on your own, readers. The crew doesn't get to learn it, but you do. And, that is that with that episode. Control, parts 1 through 3. Find out it's Nightfall. Air dates 6/20/99, 8/8/99, and 8/8/99. I guess we posted two at the same time. Yes, same air dates. We used to post them on Sunday night today. Because that's like the ideal time if you're a great show. Okay, so this one was written by Dovich. I signed off on it. It was very long, super quick. Oh, I think it was a writing credit in this now that I look at it. Huh. I don't remember that. It starts off with Galleon showing up again, obviously, because his daughter just wrote it. And he gets hired by the Warners, by Chris, to go do some things that he does. This is a little out of character for Chris. It's not all out of character at all for him to hire a mercenary behind everyone's back. If he will do anything to make this war more efficient, just monetarily and paperwork-wise. It's not out of character for him at all to send Cap to actually do it, because Cap can actually go places and not be questioned, and Fritz can't. It is out of character for Fritz to just kind of give Galleon the okay to just go murder everyone. Like, because that is on the table, is that Galleon will just murder Toads. That Toads will die, whereas normally we're not upfront about that, we are upfront about that with Galleon. But I think that was what Dovich wanted to do, and I didn't have any problem with it. So, and they got involved in this. There's a bunch of people who are sympathetic to the Toads on the planet Utlith, I think it is, which was a name that I think I want to say I came up with, but I really don't remember. I think it actually may have been Dovich. Yep, the planet did make it into a list of planets that you could be from in my LARP. But my LARP was written later. But, anyway, there's some plotline going on in Dovish, in Utlis, involving this guy named Kravis, who's a Toad, I think, who does experiments on people. And it gets a little gruesome. And I don't really remember a lot of details about it. And I don't really know. And Mr. Drake. Okay, so Mr. Drake is, what the hell is Mr. Drake? I don't remember what he was, species-wise. But he is running this evil corporation that's doing evil things. And the crew gets involved sort of by accident, like for the Righteous Indignation. I don't know, Willie doesn't do a lot in this episode. So I didn't really care about it that much. That's what it comes down to. And there's a lot of Galleon just like threatening people, murdering people. I don't know, remember exactly how it goes. But that's what happens with that. I don't ask me to go further into this episode. I don't want to reread it and just summarize what Dovich wrote. Danger Signs by DJ Carlson, Farrah McPinglet, and Dovich Nightfall. Air date 11/7/99. I'm going to grab the script. It's not a great script, but it is a great script in that we worked on it together. There were 3 senior writers involved, There's the Aldebaran plotline that's involved. It was sort of a coming together of themes from different themes from the season. It was a very good season finale. It was much stronger than the season opener in that sense, though openers are always going to be problematic. On the TV show, they're usually the weakest episode is the opener. Or the greatest episode, and they never live up to it, like The Walking Dead. But, anyway, the plot is that Lily is premiering the Mark V Accelerator at a conference. Shelly, who is the old Baron who wants it dead, obviously from her name, Shelly's dad, and teams up with Elias, who is the head of the Legion, to kill Lily, and so the Chameleons can have the Mark V plans all to himself and sell them to the highest bidder, because no one else can build this thing. The only one who really knows it, calling it back, is Lily. The season finale brings together a lot of different things that we were trying to do in season one, successful or not, I think in a pretty successful way. I wrote most of the script. I think Sarah wrote a good chunk, and Davich wrote whatever Dalian was involved in. All of those scenes, he wrote them. I've never written any Dalian material. I just wasn't in charge of that, and there's just this kind of a specific way to write Dalian that I didn't really want to learn how to do. It was just something that Salich did, and I didn't have an issue with it. So, in this episode, everyone's trying to kill Lily again, and there's a lot of Lupik makes his, I think, it's not his final appearance, but he is gone for a very long time. We don't really see him again, I think, until season 4, and then only for a scene. He was not a success as a character. I would keep him in another version, but I would write him differently. Buffy's out for most of this. He is shot early in the script, and there's a pretty great scene. We would do this a little bit too often later on, of having dream sequences or having Buffy be almost dead and then talking to people in his head. We did that too often, I think. But this is the first time it happened, and he has a great conversation with Fritz while he's unconscious. That is a conversation that he has imagined, which the Fritz that he encounters in the dream sequence mentions to him frequently, that he is just an imaginary person. He can't give him any new information. And in that conversation, they kind of sum up what's happened in the season that Buffy's gone through and how he's feeling. This is also the last, I think this is the last time Cornelius is kind of the bad guy of the episode. He negotiates with Fritz. At this point, you're supposed to figure out that Fritz is the guy that Cornelius thinks he's worshipping and pretty much cannot be killed, but at least by this guy. And this guy tries to kill him several times, fails completely, and then Mimi is really the hero of the episode. Or sort of catching, they have a plot involving Cornelius. And let me just say that if you run into a name that is clearly an anagram, like the name, you know, there's no one named Brute F. Ball in the world, then it is an anagram. I actually didn't write that scene. I'm almost 99% sure that Farrow wrote the scene where Mimi is undercover as this very, very anagram-named character who ends up being her. And it's the beginning of me liking Mimi, even though I didn't remember. I didn't have much to do with that scene. I had a lot to do with it in the very end, but Mimi shows a lot of skills in her ability to do subterfuge and her ability to act independently of the UAC, really, especially with basically, you have three captains in the UAC. Dulcer just does what he's told. Buffy runs out into every situation, like into an open field of just toad fire, and just somehow manages to survive. And Mimi thinks things out and comes up with a plan, and sometimes it's not a great plan, but she does think it out, which she has gone for her. There's only two other things I want to mention about this script. In the script, Cornelius, I forgot how much of my own mythology I put into this script. Cornelius uses the word that is Gage, which means in his language, a heretic. Gage is a gypsy word, a Romani word that means non-Romani. It's a real word. I just put it in there. Basically, I've been working on this like massive cosmology that transcended everything else I was doing as a writer. I started working on it, I think, for 10, in which Bugs Bunny ran the universe, and it showed up in my sequence stuff. It eventually blended a lot with some mythology from other things that I had seen, like Watership Down. It's a huge influence on me. It's my favorite book of all time. So a lot of the mythology in Watership Down got messed up in it, which is why you have the name Frick, which is the name of the sun god in Watership Down. Lopine is also the language that the rabbits speak in Watership Down. That's where that word comes from. And this all got messed up. It showed up in my Sequest fanfic. It showed up in my Gargoyles fanfic. It showed up in my Squawkhead fanfic. It all went from one or another. Eurasus didn't make an appearance in this series, but he's the lion god who's modeled after Aslan, who showed up in some sci-fi novels that I wrote that didn't get published. They'll probably show up again somewhere. It's just this thing that's been going on in my head for a very long time. And I decided to put it in the web series because I was putting it in everything. And the problem with it is that I've changed the rules of that cosmology so many times. And even since we stopped writing the series, I've changed them, but definitely over the course of the series, I've changed them a number of times. And I try to keep it consistent in the stories. We wrote this series over a period of 7 or 8 years, so things that I had planned to do in the beginning, by the middle I realized I shouldn't do because I had come up with what I thought was a better idea. So, like, the whole Fritz subplot line is not really worth following, I want to say. It starts off in season 1, it goes through season 5. It has things in it that are awesome. I'm going to defend it in that respect, because Fritz and Daffy come in as pretty full-bodied characters, because I've been using them for a while. I actually played Fritz twice when I did the LARP. He was a guest character twice, and Daffy was also played by someone else, and I think I might have played him once, I don't remember. Because when you're running a role-playing game, and you're actually physically running it, you have to play a lot of different characters for the players to interact with. I also may have played him... I definitely had someone play Daffy in the Harry Potter series of LARPs that I ran while I was in college, so... And eventually, like, the people who were in these games sort of got landed on, like, I have this massive weird cosmology that transcends all of the games that I run and all of the writing that I do, and they thought it was just great. Because it was hilarious. Like, I'm very good at making it funny. So, that encouraged me further, even though by that time I was pretty burned out on Harry. Basically what happened with the series is that I got burned out on Bucky O'Hare after doing the LARP at the same time as doing the web series. And that is the pretty much end of my involvement in the web series as a major player. Is because, I think because I ran that LARP and it was so incredibly demanding of me and I had to write so much material for it. Plus we're on the game and I think we had 9 sessions, something like that, over a year and a half. And it was a lot of work, and I had also was writing other things. So, that was, I didn't want to talk about Bucky O'Hare for like a year after that. But, so this first plot line just continues throughout the series. Never makes sense. Some other people tried to pick it up and run with it, particularly Rygar. And I had to kind of sign off on it because he was nervous about it because he didn't really understand it either. And I was like, well, just don't have a lot of things said in the scene because it doesn't really make sense. And, you know, so he successfully put some things in. But the main thing about Fritz was that he is just a really funny guy. He says a lot of things that I would say. Or I would want to say but then not say because I would want to remain elected. If I was an elected official, I wouldn't actually say these things. But Fritz gets away with saying them because he's really, really, really smooth. And also we learned he's a really good chairman. That he's severely underappreciated the first time he is chairman. And Daffy, you don't know this yet, but Daffy is bipolar. This was a serious thing that I decided to, I came out with in high school, and I decided to introduce, it's mentioned in the web series a couple times, that he is actually manic depressive, which has since been renamed bipolar. At the time, the research I could do on it was very limited, because again, 1998, internet doesn't have a lot of things, so you had to kind of go with a few sites that you found. I think at some point in the series, Fritz said something like, you should see him when he's manic, because he's awesome. But usually you just see him depressed, and it's not very much fun. I think the whole line actually is, you should see him when he's manic. It's awesome. We never see him manic. We only see Daffy when he is depressed. I don't think there's a single episode when he's... When you have a manic depressive, generally they are not manic for a long period of time. They're depressed most of the time. They have these bursts of mania, where they are very high energy and accomplish a lot. I know because I lived with a manic depressive in college while I was also writing the series. And then they go into a depression. Depression lasts a very long time. So, Daffy's depressed for pretty much, I think, the whole series. You never see a manic. If, you know, I never wrote an episode where he was just totally different. So I didn't want to have to explain, like, oh, and in this episode he's completely different because he's in, like, a different emotional state. Neurotransmitters in his brain are going the other way or whatever it is that makes him the way he is. Eventually we find out that he is a much more stable person in relationships. He's better at relationships. He's more loyal in relationships. He's a widower. And kind of he and Fritz have just figured out that they probably should stick together because otherwise they don't really work. That would be sort of not able to function sometimes and able to function other times, whereas Fritz is the high-functioning person but sometimes can't get his act together about being serious. So they just go together and they continue. And if they were gay, then that would be the gay couple in the series. They're not, though. They're actually straight. Unlike a lot of other characters in this series. There is one fanfic that guessed that Fritz was gay, and I was like, no, he's not. I mean, he's had a bunch of wives. He's had three wives. So no, he's not gay. If he was gay, it would be obvious, because he's got a guy around all the time. But no, he's not actually gay. He did cocaine with a guy for a while, but he did not actually have sex with him. So no, this is a straight character. Like everyone else in the universe seems to be gay. I don't know why we did that. But no, straight character. And it was very, very easy for me to write dialogue for him. Partially, again, because he's a spear bearer, it's called. When he's a character who just carries around a lot of information that is important for the audience to know. And he just, you know, he's like, hey, fuck you, I'm calling you because you need to go here and do this. So he's in a lot of scenes like that. He's also in a lot of scenes where he's just making snide comments in the background. And they're so involved, the three captains are so involved in his fits. Which particularly Mimi and Bucky and Ghostar's usually standing there, like, trying to stay above it. And Fritz is just making stormy comments. And Daffy is just smoking. And that was something that people picked on pretty quickly, and I think in almost every scene that other people wrote about him, they mentioned that he is smoking. He's like Sherlock Holmes in that respect. I think Sherlock Holmes, if you've ever actually read Sherlock Holmes by the short stories by Arthur Conan Doyle, you would know that Sherlock Holmes, and this is played down a lot in pretty much all of the adaptations because it's physically hard to do, but in the books, he is smoking in, like, every single scene. Like, a guy comes in to tell him, like, I have this mystery for you to stop me, but let's sit here and smoke about it. And then they go to investigate, and he's like, well, I really like to light up while I search this room. And then they go to, you know, they go to sit in the bushes for 12 hours to wait for the guy to break into the house, and he's like, well, there's really nothing to do but smoke. And Watson's like, yeah, sure, let's just smoke the entire time. This is not a problem at all. Yes, did cocaine, but, like, those are the only two, like, Jeffy just chain smoked through the entire series. I actually kind of, at some point, wanted to play that down to be like, alright, he can do things other than smoke. If he's physically capable of doing things other than smoking, he doesn't want to, but he can. Fritz has quit smoking. I think that this mentioned very early in season 3, he quit smoking. No, he didn't, he regrets quitting it, but he did quit it at some point. When he decided to become a politician. So, you have this, you have these two characters that they're a little neutral in that you can bring them in for a lot of things that you want to do. So you want to have Fritz contact some mercenary character like Dalian. You can get Kadash to go get Dalian, and then Fritz to talk to Dalian. And whether it's out of character for them to do it or not, it doesn't really matter that much. You know, if it was just a very generic scene, I would just say, sure, whatever, fine. This is just a necessary scene to get the story going. The series became more expansive, and we had to do more and more of those scenes later in the series. It's just like filler of, and here is the scene where they talk about what they're about to do, because we have to inform the other characters, and we have to inform the audience. Where in the first season, in season one, which is the first season of the web series, we don't do that as much. There's really point to point to point to point, because that's kind of the way that I write, and we didn't have as many characters. We had a sort of, I thought we had a lot of characters, and then it just got worse as we went along. So, anyway, that's the story with the first plot line. I don't recommend you try and read it and understand it. I'll comment on it more as it moves along, because I'm very invested in it emotionally, and I'm really not happy with the way that it turned out. I think everyone else really tried to pull it together while I was gone. But, you know, there was no way that was actually going to happen. So that was not a major failure of season one. I keep saying season one. That was not a major failure of season two. I don't think season two was at all a failure. I think it was a pretty good season for what it was. Very episodic. A lot of things are introduced early in the episode. There's conflict, and then it's resolved, and then end of the episode, no long-term ramifications. Where you get far more serial stuff moving along. And also, I noticed that as writers, we sort of came together to sound like each other very much, where individual voices in this season are very, very clear. It's very clear to me for the most part, what scenes I wrote and what scenes I didn't write. And later on in the series, I'm just like, do I have a part in this? I don't even know. We started coming together. Oh, and there is one other thing that I did want to say about the script danger side. There's a scene that I'm trying to find now that I'm scanning. There's a scene where Willie and Deadeye are sitting in the cafeteria of the hospital, and they get attacked by a Regen Lizard, and Dalian just goes completely crazy and tears out the guy's spinal cord, because you have to kill this guy pretty quickly because he can regenerate his flesh. And at that point, Willie says, his line of dialogue, he says, Jesus, could that have been gorier? And that is where Davish's line ended and mine began. You can clearly see where he wrote to, and then I responded with, holy shit, there was a lot of gore in there. I'm going to give Willie a line about that, and then continue the scene. So that's exactly, that's one of the few scenes where I can point to the exact moment where I picked up the scene. Because usually we write whole scenes separately, but this particular one, clearly, Savage wrote the Dalian part of the scene, and probably some of the stuff that happened previous to Dalian actually showing up, and then I picked up right after Dalian ripped that guy's spine off. So, I don't know why I wanted to talk about that, but I did, was rereading that last night, and I was just like, I can see what happened here. I cut that off. I mean, I had to say something. But anyway, eventually Buffy wakes up, and that's the end of the season. I think it was a good ender to the season. I'm pretty proud of that script in terms of what it accomplished based on what we had written previously. Anyway, I'm going to move on to season 3, which is the second season of the web series. I always do this where things are a little out of order. I did that with my book series too. There were actually 11 stories that turned into 10 books. So when I refer to 5 to myself, it's actually story 6. And it's driving me a little bit crazy that this always ends up happening. So, stay tuned. I'm going to post the season 3 summary. Or my thoughts on season 3.